This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down. Roger that.
Welcome to Trapping Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my trip till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trapping Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trapping Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do Trap Supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company. Have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to deer camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't.
Well, hey there, folks, and welcome to Trapping Across America. My name is Chip Davis, and I will be sitting in with you for the next little while as guest host for Trapping Radio, and I always enjoy my time that I get to spend with you guys. It is honestly a true pleasure to hang out with you all for a while and talk about trapping and just lots of other things that that may come up and that happen to be on my mind. And tonight is no different. Clint is out. He has been doing a little grocery shopping. And if you've been around this podcast for very long, you're going to know exactly what that means. I think he is back home now, or by the time that this actually airs, he will be back home. So life is good. I think he's going to have several coolers full of fish with him when he gets there. But yeah, Clint's good. All is well there, and he's actually been taking a little bit of time off away from his predator control duties and all that sort of stuff. So hopefully, Clint, you had a great week and caught just a ton of fish. So you feel free to ring me, and I'll be glad to come up there and help you eat those things sometimes. So Clint and Cindy really know, not only do they know how to catch them, but they know how to cook them too. I've had the pleasure of eating with them quite a few times, and they can do some groceries some justice. Now, I'm telling you what, they got that part figured out. Guys, before we get too far along in the show, we want to thank our sponsors. You just heard the intro. I still like to play the old intro just because that's what, the first several years I was listening to Trapping Radio and kind of became a big fan. That's what was always played. And so I still like that. And I still got a copy of that. So I put it at the first of the shows when I have a chance to record. The only problem with that is we've got a couple of new sponsors that are not listed on that old intro there. And so I always kind of like to circle around and catch those guys back up. And those two that you did not just hear about that are also sponsors are Dunlap Lures. That's Jeff Dunlap out of Alpena, Michigan. Jeff is a great guy. He makes most of the shows in the summertime. He'll be at quite a few of them around. I think actually Jeff even has plans to come down south this year to the Southeastern Regional NTA show in Crossville on over in October. And certainly he'll be at all the major shows, and a lot of you guys are used to seeing Jeff at those. I know he's got a full travel summer lined up of going and hanging out with the trappers. A great guy, makes great lure, good friend, good all around person. So give Jeff a shot at your business there. Try some of his stuff. You will be impressed. I actually use quite a few of Jeff's lures myself on my own coyote line, and he's got some stuff there at absolute go-to. You talk about quality, this guy makes some good stuff. So check out Jeff Dunlap with Dunlap Lures, and you won't be ashamed that you did. You'll be very, very, very proud that you did. So the next sponsor that we have is Alan over at Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Alan also sponsors The Rant. And Alan's a great guy. Alan will have just about anything you can think of that you need, from durable goods like traps and equipment, that sort of thing. I know he's just recently taken on a lot of the Sleepy Creek line and a lot of the stretchers and different things like that. Alan's got, they actually make in-house now, and Alan's a super good guy. Anything that you can think of trapping related, he's actually got two websites. One is their sister companies, and Alan has both of them. One of them is Hilltop Outdoors, and the other is Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. So check those guys out. Pleasure to deal with. You can't meet a nicer guy. Alan's just a stand-up guy all the way around. He's got good pricing on everything. Look him up. He's online, and he also makes a lot of the shows. So he'll be at quite a few of the of the conventions around this summer going into the fall. So look Alan up and give him a shout at your business as well, because this whole thing is about supporting the guys that support us, and these guys, along with the first ones we mentioned on the recorded sponsor recognitions, they're the guys that make Trapping Radio possible. And so they're doing this. If you enjoy the show, certainly give them a shot at your business, and just kind of help the guys that are helping you. That's what makes the world go round right there. Well, guys, it's springtime. It is almost June. I think maybe in the next 2 days, maybe tomorrow. Is it tomorrow or the next day? I'm not sure, but June is just right around the corner within a few hours now. Most guys have finished up all forms of trapping. I think even in the northern states, the spring beaver stuff is just about to wrap up. There's a little nuisance work going on that never ends, and some control work for some ADC guys and other things like that. So there's a little bit of stuff going on around the country, but for most of us, things are kind of taking a little bit of a downshift here and slowing down a little bit. A lot of guys use this time of the year to get their equipment ready, others to get permissions. All those are very, very good and valuable things. And there's a lot of other things that I think we as trappers do and enjoy. And I want to talk about a little bit of that and a few of those and some things that I've stumbled up on. I'm going to be honest with you, on this particular podcast, when Clint called me and asked me several days ago if I could fill in for him tonight, I told him I'd be glad to. I went back to thinking. I've had an idea floating around in my head for a long time, for two or three years now, that I really thought would make a good podcast. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And it's really and truly patterns. That's what we're going to discuss for a few minutes here. But we're going to kind of draw some parallels here that you may or may not have thought about before. And we're going to tie those back into trapping. So I may sound like I'm kind of skipping around a little bit, but hopefully if I do my job, I can tie all this back together by the time we get toward the end of the show here. So that's what we're going to try to do. I'm going to wet my whistle and we'll be ready to get started. I mentioned that tomorrow is right at the 1st of June. Tomorrow also is the starting of the NCAA College Collegiate Baseball Championship, I guess. Regionals is what starts tomorrow. If the teams were successful this year and met the qualifications, they are invited to a field of 64 teams that make up regionals. I think there's 16 tournaments around the country. This is collegiate baseball as far as the NCAA Division I goes. I am not a sports guy at all. I almost never follow any sports with one exception. I graduated from Mississippi State University in 1991, and I absolutely fell in love with college baseball. I bet I don't watch three professional baseball games a year, save maybe the World Series. I'll sometimes tune into that in the fall. But other than that, I don't do sports much at all. Hardly ever watch. Nothing against it. I mean, there's a lot of guys that do and follow it. My hat's off to them. It's great if they like that sort of thing. I almost never watch football. I mean, I'm just not a sports guy. Growing up, I played a little bit of Little League baseball, and I'm talking about when I was single digits, 8, 9 years old, something like that. And I quickly learned that when our baseball season was going on here, so was our turkey season. And I would a whole lot rather be out in the woods late one evening trying to roost a gobbler than I had at a baseball practice somewhere. So my baseball career was very, very, very short-lived. But then I got over to Mississippi State and went to school and actually took a job on the aquaculture farm there. And we raised a lot of crazy things, crawfish and freshwater shrimp and tilapia and striped bass and all kind of different things. And I'm thinking that since I graduated in 91, that the statute of limitations has run out on this that I'm about to disclose. If not, somebody could probably come get me in a lot of trouble. But I worked second shift, so I came in at 3 and got off at 11. And my main job, my boss, was a huge Mississippi State baseball fan. And that program has got a little bit of national recognition. And one of the key things, it's just really, really a cool ballpark. And the left field lounge is really, really popular. You may have heard of that, even if you live in up in the northern tier of the country. Mississippi State baseball is really kind of famous for the left field lounge. Left field lounge, what that is guys will used to, we've got a new park now, but used to, they would cook. I mean, everybody that came, it'd be little groups of 3 or 10 or 15, and folks were cooking all the time. Well, my job when I was, at the fish farm, was as soon as I got there, if there was going to be a home baseball game, I needed to go seine a crawfish pond, or maybe that day my boss wanted to to grill some freshwater shrimp, and so I would go catch those, and I'd have them at the ballpark by the time that night game started. And while we were supposed to be feeding fish and doing our duties there, we were actually watching ball games and eating. So somewhere today, there's still some PhD professor scratching his head wondering why those feed rations didn't work out exactly like they should have had back years ago in the late 80s and early 90s. So at any rate, because of that, I kind of fell in love with baseball. What does baseball have to do with trapping? Well, not much, probably, but if you look a little bit closer, maybe it does. And say, fast forward to, I think it was 2 years ago, and it may have even been three, my buddy Carl, that's been on the show quite often, ADC guy out of Memphis, Carl and I were having a conversation. He's a huge Arkansas fan, and I think that particular weekend, Arkansas was playing Mississippi State in baseball, and we were back and forth ribbing each other like buddies do, and we just started, each of us started talking about the patterns and the little nuances of baseball, and the conversation kind of grew, and that's where this whole idea came from. So, you know, baseball is a game of patterns. 9 innings, 3 outs per inning per team, you know, so, I mean, you can calculate that out. 27 outs in the game, whoever's got the most points at the end wins, you know, seldom ever a tie unless it's weather-induced or something like that. Pretty simple game, but slap full of patterns. You know, when in a baseball game, especially at this level, when you get to the collegiate level, I'm sure it's probably the same as in pro ball or whatever, but you know, there's scouting reports on everybody. Well, why do they have scouting reports? Because the guys are somewhat predictable. You know, here's a guy that's coming up. He usually hits the ball to the, you know, right side of the field. You know, a lot right now the shift is getting real popular, where you move a couple of extra guys over that way. Or, you know, right-handed batters don't hit left-handed pitchers as well on averages. Everything is calculated out on averages and percentages, and that equates to patterns. And so baseball's a real easy analogy to make when you're talking about patterns. You know, a lot of you know this right off the top of the head, but what's the pattern? A lot of times, especially if you've got a tight ball game, you get down toward the end of the innings and maybe a little bit slower runner on first base and the rest of the bases are open, but it's a really tight game. Somebody may want to try the bunting game. Well, why would you want to do that if nobody's out yet? Well, you bunt the guy over into scoring position because a base hit then would win the game if it's tied. Or, you know, maybe you set up for the defense sets up for the double play, brings the infield in a little closer to the infield grass where you got a better shot at turning that double play if there is one out and get out of the inning. There's, you know, little things like that. Even the pitch sequences, how the outfielders play, everything is based on patterns that they've researched and they've, you know, studied the other team and that they react to them. Well, when you really think about it, life itself is full of patterns, and it doesn't end at baseball. Baseball's a really good example. We may even come back and catch another baseball or two examples before this is over. But what about wildlife? You know, I'm a huge turkey hunter. Turkeys, and I've been trying to shoot turkeys all over the United States, and I'm getting way down that list. I still got 10 or 11 states left to go, but we're just about to finish this thing up. And so I hunt turkeys all over. I may be in Louisiana 1 week, and the next week, this year happened to be a great example of that. I was in Idaho about 10 days after I was in Louisiana. Those turkeys are in completely different life cycles, but they're following the same patterns. Once I understood that pattern, I know exactly what the turkeys are thinking. I know what his life cycle is because I know what his pattern is, if that's making any sense. The same thing is if you've got, you know, a runner on first and a runner on second and two outs, and you've got the best hitter on the other team coming up to bat, and right following him is the worst hitter on the team. You may intentionally walk a guy. Why would you ever walk a guy to put him on base, especially if you're that close to winning the ball game, or if you're up by one run or whatever? Well, you may walk the best hitter because he's got a pattern of being the best hitter to, because you got a base open, to get to the worst hitter. Is this making sense? I'm hoping guys can relate to this, because this is patterns and this is things that are studied. Well, if I know that turkeys go from a dominant state or a dominant establishing state early in the season, once they start their gobbling and they need to get that pecking order established, they're going to be fighting. They're going to be fighting for that pecking order. They're going to be want to be the top bird there. Then, that changes how I react to them. That changes what I do. I mean, typically, in baseball, a guy wouldn't come up to the plate and he'd be your best hitter, but you know, there's nobody out. You're not going to intentionally walk him most of the time. I don't need to call to that turkey the same way in Idaho that are establishing pecking order and dominance than I would in Louisiana that are completely through and about to stop their breeding. It's a life cycle, but it's also a pattern. The same thing goes to trapping. Now, guys, I'm a coyote guy. Most of my examples are coyotes, but early season coyote trapping, my whole entire methodology of trapping, if you look at my line in September or October, it looks completely, totally different than it does in February or March. Coyotes, there are lots of pups running around that time of the year. Pups are inquisitive. They're checking out everything. They hadn't really learned a bunch about life. If you're in the fur side of it, which I'm not, I'm a live market guy, but if you're in the fur side, a lot of times it's the best quality coyotes that are out there. The absolute top dollar coyotes are usually caught early on because they haven't gone to the rough and tumble way, and they're still pups. They're still, the fur is better. They're inquisitive. They're easier to catch. I'm heavy on dirt holes there. But it's not just because I like to dig a dirt hole in the fall. It's because of that pattern. And it's because I've learned to realize that pattern and associate it with coyotes. Later in the season, as those pups mature, a lot of them are called, a lot of them disperse out of the area. You get back to more adult coyotes that are just in the population that you're shooting at. My game changes completely. I go to almost all dirt hole sets in the fall to almost no dirt hole sets from breeding season forward. I really don't even go back to the dirt hole sets until late in the summer. What little bit of summer trapping I do once the pups are out there. And like right now, even though it's hot in Mississippi right now, extremely hot, it's summertime hot, our pup coyotes are still just about too small to even catch. I mean, they're still really, really, they're still, they're not even weaned yet at this point in time. So, I'm not even quite to that point in time yet. But give me a couple more months. You get on over into August or so, then pups are starting to range away from the den a little bit. They get really, really inquisitive. That's a pattern. That's just like that runner on second and how you're going to play him. It's just like that gobbler, and it's the same gobbler, it's the same subspecies of turkey that lives in Idaho that lived in Louisiana, but I hunted them completely, totally different, even though I was only, a week or 10 days difference on the calendar. The difference is those northern turkeys were way behind. In fact, the matter, it even snowed when I was up there this spring. And since then, they had another big snow, I think, later on. So with several inches of snow on the ground. So that just kind of puts that wildlife and the animals in general in totally, totally different. Just patterns. I don't know a better way to say it, but it's just a complete total difference in the patterns themselves. And so that's what I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about tonight, is how to identify those patterns and how to react to it. Because just like in the game of baseball, you can't really understand when to put the shift on, when to move your outfield back, when to draw your infield in, when to put the bunt sign on, until you've had enough experience in the game to learn the patterns. That's the key. Guys, if you want to catch more fur, learn the patterns of the animal that you're trapping. I've got several examples I can give you of this. I'm a big proponent. A lot of you that follow me know that I'm big into these boxes for where it's legal, for the cubby boxes for bobcats. Perfectly legal here where I live in Mississippi. A lot of places it's not, so check your rules on that. I'm not going to get into what I do on my cubby boxes in this show, but I wanted to tell you a little bit how I learned some patterns here about some animals. I set these cubby boxes primarily for bobcat, and I noticed something right off the bat. Actually, I had a good friend down in Louisiana, Terry Jones, and Terry Lynn had noticed this too. And as soon as I adopted the box theory, I started noticing, and we catch quite a few raccoons in those same cubby boxes. They're set for bobcats. But the interesting thing about the raccoons that we were catching in them, I think maybe to this day, if I have caught a sow or a kit raccoon in a cubby box, there's only been, I can count them on one hand. Almost every single raccoon I catch in these, my boxes are designed for 220s, and almost every raccoon I catch in them is a huge, huge boar coon. It's hard to even imagine how he got his gump head in that 220. I mean, I'm talking about huge coons. We almost never catch sour kit coon in the cubby boxes. And why is that? So this is the learning the patterns thing. This is how I learned what's going on here. And it just takes some thinking, and it takes some looking at sign. It takes some creative thinking. And sometimes it's just hypothesis. That's where I'm at on this raccoon thing. I don't know for a fact, but I've talked to a lot of people that have caught a lot more raccoon than I have. And I honestly believe we're setting these bobcat boxes for bobcats. That, well, I know that's the fact, but where would you set a bobcat box for a bobcat? You're going to set them where a bobcat lives. It's going to be more on the thickets. It's going to be, down here, there's a lot of cutover around, a lot of travel ways back and forth there. It's in bobcat habitat. That's where we're going to set those. Well, I learned something there. We're almost always in the same exact area as the big boar male adult coon. They're a much more of a predator than I think people really give them credit for, where the sows and the kits, maybe they stay on the water's edge most of the year for the easy meals and around the water. But most of the time, at least down here, these big boars will be right up there in the thickets, and they'll eat just about anything they can get their hands on. And I think that's the reason. It's just more of a habitat thing, and it's a pattern of what we were seeing. Guys, patterns are absolutely everything. Nature is patterns. That's all nature is. I mean, you think about the seasons that change. It's a pattern. They follow the same. We have spring, and then we have summer. We have fall. The leaves change, and we have winter. It's patterns. Even human beings have patterns. I mean, if you're listening to this show, one day you were born, then you were a toddler, and then all of a sudden you were, a young person, and then you were adolescent, and then you grew up. I mean, that's just kind of what we all do. And so that's really, really broad stroke, really, really generic. But what does that tell you? If you wanted to, if you wanted to advertise to somebody, say you were selling, this is a classic example, who eats breakfast cereal the most? I know a lot of grown men that do, but mostly it's kids. Where is the breakfast cereal placed in the grocery store? About kid height, about 2 or 3 feet tall. That's a pattern. That life is just full of patterns. And trapping is a big pattern. Successful trappers, every one of them, I've had the pleasure and the honor, a lot of this comes from this show, to interview and visit with a lot of the very best trappers across the country. and I've had a chance to sit down with lots of them, the resounding thing that every one of them echo, and maybe not in quite so many words, but their stories are all the same. There came a time that they realized the patterns. That is the catalyst that takes you from where you are now to the next level, is understanding the patterns. I think that's the same even in business or just about anything you can ever imagine in life. There's always patterns. And so I guess inside there's a few key points. You've got to identify the patterns, that's for sure. Sometimes it's easier to identify them than it is to understand them. I know we're jumping around a little bit with a lot of examples. So let's go back to coyotes, I guess. My personal coyote career, I tried for several years to catch a coyote and could not. I thought they had wings or something. I mean, I could see the sign. I started learning that. And I've always been heavy into sign. The guy that taught me how to trap in the 80s was a sign guy. That's what he preached as much as anything. Learn from this animal, learn how to read the sign, learn what he does. Follow him. If you're in country that you can, if it's snow, which we don't get a lot of down here, but if it's sandy conditions, follow him. You know, I mean, I've literally walked a set of coyote tracks where I could see them for hour and a half sometimes, just to learn what that coyote's doing. Where did he come from? Where was he going to? All of a sudden, I might be able to see that repeated. Not every day I get to follow a set of coyote tracks for an hour and a half, but just because our conditions where I live won't let us do that with the woods and a lot of times, you know, crusted over fields or pastures or whatever, it's hard to see that. But when I can, I always take advantage of that, because what I'm doing is I'm identifying patterns. Let's go a step further. When, let's say it's later in the season, it's February, it's breeding season. I'm all of a sudden observing this sign and I'm seeing two coyote tracks everywhere we go. Well, there comes a little bit of deduction that it's breeding season. I know that just from my experience as coyote trappers. I know as a coyote trapper, I know about when they breed. It's going to be that, you know, here where I live in that February to early March kind of range, that may be getting toward the tail end of it. Sometimes it can start as early as late January, but February is the month. If I'm seeing two coyote tracks and I'm following those and I'm seeing on a regular basis, then I'm thinking that's a breeding pair. I've not been right every time, but most of the time I follow that pattern because I know it's breeding season, there's two coyote tracks, and most of the time that is going to be a breeding pair. Well, how am I going to react to that? The reaction, you know, the understanding the general patterns is one thing. Kind of ground truth in it, like, you know, so that the first example of that would be, I know it's breeding season because this is when most of the coyotes are bred. Or even if you want to backdate that and really tear that apart a little bit further, start noticing when you first see pups. What age would you guesstimate those pups? Back up. We know what the gestation is for a coyote, 63 days. So back up from there. When was that female coyote bred? You can go into some pretty, and you may not get to the exact date, but you can get within a week or two with that kind of reasoning, deductive reasoning, and you can back into when that breeding season was. All right, so that may have been a little bit too deep into the understanding the pattern. So that's the first part. You understand it's breeding season. The second part is identify we are in that particular pattern right now. We're talking about, we're not talking about June, I'm talking about, you know, breeding season coyotes. All right, so I know it's mid-February. I'm looking at the ground. I see two coyotes. I'm assuming that's going to be a breeding pair of coyotes. I go to the other side of the farm that I feel like I'm completely away from those. I may be a mile away. I look down at the ground. All of a sudden, there's another two sets of coyote tracks. Everywhere I look, coyote tracks are in sets of two. You know, they're side by side. That tells you a lot of what's going on. Now you've got kind of two things going for you there. So then the third part about understanding and reacting to the patterns is the reactionary part. All right, I know I'm in a general stage. Now it's kind of a little bit more proven to me because I see the pattern even repeated on the ground. It's being ground truth to me. And so then there's a reactionary part. What do I do? Well, you know, if I'm a one trap set guy, that's all I do is set one trap per location. How am I going to catch two coyotes with one trap right there? I'm always going to go up on equipment, you know, during that breeding season. How am I going to know it's breeding season? Because of what we just got through talking about, you know. Or other times of the year, especially if I'm limited on equipment, I may go to, you know, to single sets just to cover more area, especially if it's a new place and I'm not 100% of the travel ways and the sign is hard to see. I may drop back and until I can kind of figure that out with one trap per location on a few. Early season where the pups are still running in family groups for the most part, I can't catch a quad with two traps out there. I can't catch a double with one trap. I'm sure somewhere somebody has caught two coyotes in one trap probably before, and it makes me an utter liar. But for a general rule, you know, you can't have multiple catches out of one trap. So you got to understand those patterns, and those patterns are when are coyotes going to be most acceptable to be in running in groups or family groups or multiples. You know, otter is no different. I dabble in a little bit of otter trapping some. I wouldn't even call myself an otter trapper, but I sure do love to set for them. They're a cool little animal. And, you know, all the way through most of our trapping season, they're in family groups the whole entire time. I mean, it's almost absurdity only to set, if you're where I am and know and understand that these otter are almost always in family groups during our trapping season when we can trap them, why would you ever just set one otter snare or one, you know, trap for an otter, whether it be a body grip or a foothold or whatever it may be? When you understand their patterns, that's the reactionary part. That's how understanding those patterns can help you up your game and can absolutely put more fur in your shed at the end of the year. There are so many different examples, and I'm thinking of 12 or 15 good, easy ones here, and I'm trying to pick maybe, you know, one or two more just to kind of finish this up and drive this home. It's maybe a little bit shorter kind of a show because I really thought that that I could go a little deeper here. And the whole patterns and understanding is a much deeper topic because it's got so many. This is a really broad stroke talk on this because patterns have so much to be understood. You go into, I'm going to probably go off on a little bit of a tangent here. There is a thing that if you're a mathematician or if you were really paying attention in school, you may remember something called Fibonacci numbers. Fibonacci numbers are a sequence or a pattern of numbers that suggests, and there's no magic here, this is just patterns, that if a particular occurrence happens twice, there's a really good chance that same thing will happen three times. You ever heard people talk about, we're having flats, I just had two, so I know I'm going to have another one? That goes back to Fibonacci numbers. If it happens three times, this is kind of the real crazy thing. You get into statistics, and this is the things that statisticians study and all that. There's no real occurrence from three to four. Three to four just kind of is more of a 50-50 deal. If something happens four times in a row, is almost certain it will happen the fifth time. Then you skip on up there, and I don't even remember. You get up in the teens, and it's almost certainty if something happens. I don't even want to quote it because I don't remember the actual numbers. I want to say it's like 14 and almost always happen on the 15th. Anyway, there's certain things there. It's Fibonacci numbers. And what that is just a pattern. I know that's kind of some crazy, spooky, almost hocus pocus science out there, but it is science. And that's what some people study. And it's some pretty neat information to have, especially when you have a particular genre that you're trying to apply that to. That can apply to trapping. You know, if I've got a particular location, you know, and I understand these Fibonacci numbers and I know that there's more coyotes in the area and I caught two, well, there's a really good chance if I still got signed, I can catch three based on nothing but these Fibonacci numbers and patterns and the way that happens. If I've caught four and I know that there's still sign in the area, still live coyotes out there, my chances go really, really, really high to catch the fifth one. You would think that there'd be a lot of factors against you there. Maybe that fifth one out there has seen four other coyotes get caught, and you may think that there's probably a lesser chance. But actually, science will show if you catch four, there's usually other parameters going on that's going to make the fifth one happen. That's getting a little far-fetched and a little way out there and some things, but I did want to bring it up because I thought it was a really interesting concept and something that I've kind of been following along and a student of since literally high school days, years and years ago, because it is really a cool thing. I think the bigger thing is understanding the animals, understanding body language of animals. I'm going to jump back to my turkeys real quick. Here again, it's a pattern, but all turkeys do it. All the six of the subspecies do this. A turkey gets scared. What's the first thing he does? Before he spooks, he's not spooked and he's not running off, but he's alarmed. Something is just a little bit up. He may not even be alarmed enough to give you an alarm put, a vocalization that says, hey, I'm out of here, boom. You know, if you equate that to a human, that's going to be a scream, and then they're running. And the same thing with a turkey, it's an alarm put, and they're running. But before that even happens, just something kind of draws his ire. Something's not right. He kind of smells a rat, but he doesn't know what it is. He's not ready to run away quite yet. They all do one thing. Every subspecies, I've noticed this time and time and time again. I learned this 30 years ago. Every single spring, I see multiple turkeys do this. I heard it explained to me with an analogy of the old westerns, and two old cowboys are going to back to back, and they're going to pace 20 steps, and they're going to turn around, and they're going to have a gunfight. What's the first thing they do before they even start pacing? They take their hand and they reach down and they just touch their gun just to make sure it's still there. What does a turkey do when he gets alarmed? He's going to lift those wings just about an inch, both of them, and set them right back down. What's he doing? He's just checking to make sure they're still there. What was the gunfighter doing? He's checking to still make sure his gun's still there because he might need them. You know, up until, excuse me, guys. Bear with me. Up until that point in his day, he may not have been alarmed at all. He had no use for his wings. But all of a sudden, he was just a little bit alarmed. Something's up. He doesn't know what it is. And it may just be a squirrel that runs across the road. I've observed turkeys doing this when they had no clue I was in the world. I was 500 yards away watching them with binoculars. And they got alarmed by another critter running across the road or whatever, or, you know, running across the field. And they look, their head pop up, they look, they pick those little wings up and just about an inch or so, and not little wings, but they pick their wings up a little, and they set them right back down. Oh, okay, that was a squirrel. Everything's back to normal. It goes to pecking around and being a turkey again. You know, coyotes do the same thing. Bobcats do the same thing, not with wings, obviously, but they've got their own little nuances. The more you learn those, and they also have nuances that they'll show you in their sign. Circling is a really, really good example of this with coyotes. What do coyotes almost invariably do when they run across anything new, because they're phobic by nature to start with, they're going to circle. Well, if they're going to circle, and you know you've seen this 100 times, and your trap is always in front, but that particular set on that particular location, and you've been setting this for 10 years, and you know every single year you set this, especially if it's sandy ground or snow or anything that you can see tracks real easily, and you know he circles every time, why are we still putting our trap out front where we're not catching them? Put it on the circle path, you know? Start measuring it. Take a tape measure with you if you want to. Measure those tracks. How far was the circle? Was it 3 feet out there? I have students to this day, every single year, and they're amazed at, you know, everybody's kind of heard the 10-2 rule, the 9-3 rule, whatever. And sometimes I'll take a trap, and I make a point to do this with my students. And I don't just do it just to set the trap way out there, but if I see a circle type of episode what I'm going to do with that student is I'm going to demonstrate first, and then I'm going to ask him to critique my logic and my rationale, and I'll set that trap 4, 5, 6 feet away from my attractant. It kind of blows the 10 and 2 out of the water, doesn't it? Well, there's always a reason. The reason I do that is because I'm setting it right on that coyote track where I saw the coyote circling. Usually what I'm accomplishing there is I'm doing two things. I'm teaching my students the patterns of coyotes. Then I come back and I say, look, I've seen 50 coyotes do that this year. They're circling at 3.5, 4 feet away. This particular situation, I had a briar bush right here at 3.5, 4 feet away. I feel like he's going to circle right outside that. I may be 5 or 6 feet away. And the reason I'm thinking that is because look right here. You see this in the ground? That's a damn coyote track. He did the exact same thing here. You know, because we can't see our sign real good, but all of a sudden you get looking real close. We can see those two center toenails. You back up there 4 or 5 feet where he was, and there's a solid track. I know it's a coyote track. He went right around here, so I'm setting the trap there. Will that coyote eventually get to where he trusts that attractant enough to come up there and get caught on the front side of the set? Yes, a very good possibility he will, but it's going to take on day 8, day 9, day 10, day 14 of the set. I'd much rather catch him on day 1 or day 2, you know, night 1, night 2, night 3, early on. Does that mean that I'm not going to put a trap at my location at the attractant? No, I'm probably going to put one there too, but I'm also going to have this other back door locked up, and the only reason it's a back door is because the coyote showed me it's a back door. So let's kind of go back through our logic here. I've seen the pattern. I know the pattern exists. I know coyotes circle. I ground truth that because I saw the tracks in the ground where the coyote was circling on this particular set. It goes right hand in hand with the pattern, and I was reactionary to it. I put the trap where it's going to go. There's three things to always think about with any patterns. You know, can we use those same three things with baseball? I think we already have. You know, you got a, tie game. You got to get the winning run. It's the bottom of the ninth. You're up to bat. You're the home team. All I got to do is get one run. I have a walk-off run in the bottom of the ninth. I got, First guy up to bat, he walks. He gets on first. I'm going to bunt him over. I'm going to get him in scoring position. That gives me two more outs. My chances are up. I understand that. So that's the understanding of the pattern. You know, it takes less effort to get somebody home to score. So then I identify the situation. I got the runner at first. Now I make a decision. That's the identification, the ground truth. And I know now I'm in this situation. I know the situation existed. Now I know I'm in that situation. Now I'm going to be reactionary. If I'm the coach, I'm going to tell my guy to go up there and bunt and, you know, take the out at first, but move the runner over to second. Same thing that we just talked about with the coyotes. Same thing. We're seeing patterns. We're reacting. We're ground truthing the patterns to make sure this is not just an accident. And then we're reacting to those patterns. Really, really huge. It applies to hunting. It applies to trapping. It applies to business. I can paint the exact same models to you in business, but they're all patterns. And once you understand this, I'm telling you, life just really, really gets easier. I mean, it's you understand things so much more, and it's like instead of, why is all this happening? I can't understand any of it. Now, all of a sudden, there's a rhyme and a reason because I see the pattern. And now, and this is the cool part, is once you get there, it continues to grow because there's several other stages outside the three that we've talked about revolving around patterns. When you get to the more advanced, when you start seeing these things happen and you start seeing these patterns unfold, regardless if you're talking about baseball, trapping, hunting, business, it makes no difference. When you start seeing these patterns unfold and you really start understanding them, the more that happens, the better you're going to become at it. Then the better you become at it, the more you're able to even take this further, because I promise you there is lots and lots of other pattern type things that go beyond those first three steps. We just kind of really been hitting the basics and the highlights of what we're talking about, but there's much more to this whole theory. So guys, I just encourage you to start kind of thinking along those lines a little bit. You know, we just really hit the tip of the iceberg. This is something that I would like to maybe go into a little bit further on a different show, or different, maybe another show at another time, or sometime where I got a little bit more time. But this is kind of a little bit spur of the moment, but I did want to bring it back because you know, this all kind of came about with a collegiate baseball thing, and the regional will start tomorrow, and my Bulldogs are actually there, so Hell State, go Dogs. Hopefully we go all the way to Omaha and walk away with our first ever national title, but we'll see. We've got a pretty good club this year, and we'll see how that happens. Right after that, it will be show season. That's another pattern. It always comes around this time of the year. Guys, we'll be all around the country this year. With Expand Japan, we'll be in Springfield, Missouri at the NTA. We'd love to see you there. We'll also for sure be at Southeast Regional in October in Crossville, Tennessee. We'll be at the Mississippi Convention, which is September 27th and 28th in Pearl, Mississippi at Bass Pro. If you're in the South, don't miss that convention. And also be aware, we're having our first ever FBU, Fur Bears Unlimited Banquet, which is kind of the sister organization to that helps raise money for the NTA and has banquet style events with live auctions and that sort of thing. So make sure you make plans to be at that. And while we're off on talking about that, I know you guys have heard what Clint's doing. He's got a couple of giveaways. There's a huge election this year in NTA. We got two really, really good guys running for president. One guy in particular, Mr. John Daniels, has just done a ton of positive things for trapping and for that benefit all of us, both on the national level and also on the state level. Just a huge resume. Clint is actually has a huge giveaway that I'm part of, and all you got to do is just prove that you voted in the NTA election. You send Clint a evidence where you filled out your ballot and you sent it in, then you're automatically entered into that contest once you provide proof that you voted in the NTA election. And also, if you join the NTA between now and July, when the convention is, you're also entered into another drawing of free product from a lot of us that kind of care about these associations and want to see them succeed and want to see positive change coming out of there. So don't forget about those. Start watching for these patterns, guys, as you start putting your thoughts together for your upcoming season. You know, the patterns are everywhere there, and you can apply this to everyday life and at your job, at your, you know, in even your family. Patterns are everywhere. Kind of remember the first three introductory ideas with patterns like we've covered today, and then start growing on top of those. I think that your life will become easier as a result of it, and I think it'll open your eyes to a lot of things. Guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap the show up. I appreciate you hanging in with me this long. It may be a few minutes shorter than a typical show here, but that's okay. And I absolutely have enjoyed my time with you guys. You are truly the greatest people on the planet, the North American Trapper. Love to hang out with you, and I appreciate your attendance. Until the next time I get a chance to hang out with you, this is Chip signing out for Trapper Radio. We're